on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Maryland Morning. The violence that followed Freddie Gray's funeral last year and increased scrutiny of police departments nationwide have focused attention on the question of citizen involvement in monitoring the conduct of police and the larger issue of bridging the divide between law enforcement and communities of color. Keisha Brown is the head of the Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Baltimore Civilian Review Board, and Rodney Hill is the Chief of Internal Affairs in the Baltimore Police Department. This morning, a conversation about the role citizens can and should play when it comes to police accountability. And Monica Lopez-Gonzalez is a neuroscientist and a theater artist. Her new play is part of her continuing work exploring the intersection between our brains and our creativity. She'll tell us about framed illusion. Gil Sandler has a Baltimore story. Nathan's got the local news. Maryland Morning starts right after these headlines.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. On Monday, Officer Edward Nero was acquitted on all charges related to his involvement in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray. The prosecution argued that Nero committed an assault when he detained Mr. Gray without justification. Judge Barry Williams rejected that contention in delivering his not guilty verdict. But questions surrounding when and under what circumstances an officer's actions are justified are central to the ongoing discussion that Baltimoreans have been having since the death of Freddie Gray about the frayed relationship between police and communities of color. When questions about the behavior of police or citizens arise during any given interaction, after the fact, who gets to make the determination that the actions of either party were justified? Most people think that when they question their treatment by police, their only recourse is to report that officer to the police department and hope for an internal investigation. But that's not the case. The Civilian Review Board is an independent city agency. It's been around since 1999. They're charged with investigating claims of abusive language, harassment, false arrest, and false imprisonment. Many have complained that the board has been ineffective. Keisha Brown joins me in the studio. She was appointed by Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake last year as the director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board. She aims to change that perception of effectiveness. Rodney Hill joins us as well. He's the Chief of Internal Affairs for the Baltimore Police Department. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is an important conversation, and I'm glad you're both here. So, Ms. Brown, let's start with you. Just tell us the basics. What's the Civilian Review Board? What powers does the board have in making decisions in cases involving police misconduct or alleged police misconduct?
Sure, and thank you so much for having me, Tom. So the Civilian Review Board is the only independent agency in the city authorized to investigate the police for alleged misconduct. And as you mentioned, it's false arrest, false imprisonment, abusive language, harassment, but also excessive force. The Civilian Review Board in Baltimore City is somewhat unique in the sense that it not only has jurisdiction over the Baltimore City Police Department, but also the Sheriff's Office, the school police, the Watershed Police, and the police forces of both Morgan State University and Baltimore City Community College.
Yeah, so that's a pretty wide mandate. Yeah, so virtually almost any interaction you'd have with a police person of all of those different jurisdictions and those different departments, your board could be involved.
Yes. Yeah.
How are the members of the board chosen?
So the board, like other boards around the city, is governed by the process in the charter where the mayor nominates someone that goes to the city council who has to review and approve. So technically, the mayor makes a nomination. It goes to the city council. They have an executive nominations hearing. If that committee then approves, it gets forwarded to the full city council, who then gives their approval, and then the mayor officially swears that person in.
And where does the mayor get the ideas for people? Do people volunteer to be on the board?
People do. Some people reach out directly to the mayor. When I started, I aggressively started reaching out to different community members, different organizations, attending the mayor's public safety forums and engaging people who might be interested in joining the Civilian Review Board. It is unique also in the sense that each member represents one of the police districts. So instead of having at-large people from around the city, if you live in the Northeast District, then you would be the representative on the Civilian Review Board for the Northeast District.
And there are how many districts? Is it nine?
There are nine.
Okay, and how many members of the board are currently serving?
There are six sitting members now, with one waiting to be sworn in. By the next Civilian Review Board meeting, we'll have two vacancies.
Mm-hmm. And what's your guesstimate about when those two vacancies can be filled?
Well, it's constantly reaching out to members of the community, engaging those who might be interested. We did have one person who was supposed to be for the Western District and then at the last minute backed down. And so that's why we have the two vacancies. But I'm always open to engaging folks. I get emails semi-regularly from people who voice interest. And usually it's just figuring out what district that person lives in. And then I usually meet with them individually, tell them a little bit about the board, answer any questions, and then forward their name to the mayor.
And this is a voluntary position, right? Folks don't get paid to be on the Civilian Review.
You get paid with love from the city.
There you go.
It is a volunteer. That's right. It's a volunteer position. We try to provide, you know, snacks and food, whatnot, because we do expect the board members to attend the monthly meetings, which range from about an hour and a half to 2 hours. But then also, it's a lot of reading because they're constantly getting new
complaints.
They're
looking at cases.
That's right. New complaints to review, as well as completed reports to also review and make determinations on.
And Mr. Hill, there's a sort of inherent tension, I would imagine, between a police department and oversight from any entity outside of the police department, be it civilians or even, you know, politicians or just anybody you can think of. What's your general approach? What's the general position of the police department about the validity and the effectiveness of civilians taking a look at individual cases in which officers have interacted with citizens?
I'm not certain if I would agree and say the inherent tension is there. Are there disagreements? I meet with Director Brown a lot. We talk a lot. I wouldn't say we agree on everything. We haven't, but we maintain a good relationship. And the primary thing is just to maintain try to keep a positive relationship because we both have the same objective going forward. So there's not this, you know, circling the wagons and covering up and saying, no, don't do this, don't do that. It is, we both have the same objective. Sometimes objectives are a little bit different. I would definitely agree with that. But I think overall, the whole purpose and intention is to provide a very effective department, a professional agency, one that serves the public and the citizens of Baltimore in a very professional manner. Again, just certain expectations that people have when they call the police. And that's all we're trying to do is make sure that everything is done properly.
How about the argument or the position that says if you have a complaint about the police, mm-hmm. going to the police department to complain about it is like, you know, the foxes guarding the hen house. That mm-hmm. you really, there's no way that you could really expect to get an objective answer to your complaint, and that the Civilian Review Board is really the only option you'd have. You've got to go outside the police department in order for your complaint to be adjudicated properly.
This year alone, between January and May, we've terminated 12 officers, Commissioner Davis has. So to say that the policing doesn't occur, it does occur. There are many examples of it, some in the news. Unfortunately, a lot of the cases, these are personnel matters. So personnel matters, we can't then broadcast and say, hey, we just fired Officer Armstrong, we just did this to this person, you can't do it because the personnel matters. But I think I run a very good shop. We run a very professional shop. We do monthly training. That's something new that we started under Commissioner Davis. We centralize all the discipline. And I think that we've definitely come a long way. And our job is to police the police. And I think we do it very well. But I do understand someone from the outside looking in. And that's one of the many discussions that myself and Director Brown have had about, is it being done effectively? Is it being done? I would say it is. I would probably venture to say that Director Brown would probably say differently. But I do understand how that is viewed. But that said, we do get many people who come in and do make the complaint. So obviously, I think that there is a feeling that it is being done properly.
Mm-hmm. Director Brown, what do you think?
Well, I think that around the country, the issues around civilian oversight are coming to the forefront as more and more videos of excessive force or improper use of force, and then questions around the internal investigations. And I think that the public has a right to know that when there is a complaint that is made or there are allegations of misconduct, that they're being properly followed through. The reality is that the system is not perfect here in Baltimore, and we have a lot of work to do in order to ensure that complaints are taken seriously in the way that people expect them to be thoroughly investigated, for them to hear back, be notified, and so forth. So I think, you know, civilian oversight provides that checks and balance. Yeah. There are a variety of ways to do it around the country where internal affairs and civilian oversight or independent audits, some agencies don't have police conducting the internal investigations of their own department. So it's done very differently around the country.
So, Ms. Brown, I understand the Civilian Review Board has implemented a mediation process. What does that mean?
So launching this year in partnership with both the Baltimore City Police Department and Community Mediation Baltimore, with consultation from the FOP, we've launched the Civilian Review Board Police Complaint Mediation Program. And it's an opportunity for individuals who might want to opt to have that dialogue with the police officer. Not every case might need to be fully investigated. Sometimes people just want to have their voice heard. There might be a misunderstanding. The officer might have the opportunity to educate an individual about, you know, what they were doing or what they were thinking, and be able to communicate better so that hopefully we're mending relationships and also creating them.
And it does require cooperation of the police department. For example, they are required by law to turn over within 48 hours any complaints that they've received. Haven't always been able to meet that standard, but at least that's what the law says. So you've got to work with the police. And Mr. Hill, your job, you may be the least popular guy in the police department, right? You're the head of internal affairs.
And that's one of the things. So Commissioner Davis did centralize all the disciplines, so we've now I've actually taken more responsibility. So it's the Office of Professional Responsibility. I have an Internal Affairs Commander. I have a Compliance Commander. I have someone who's the Commander of the EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity.
Both of you really need the cooperation,
yes,
of the department, of the officers, of the commanders.
Listen, most officers, I've been in this field for 32 years, and police officers don't want to work with someone who is doing things that's not right. No one wants that, because everyone understands that brings the profession down. Everyone then wants to put everyone in the same box. So we get officers, I mean, the number of internal complaints just from within has definitely risen, and it's been a steady rise. The number of external complaints has been on a downward trajectory, and hope it stays that way. So I think everyone has the same objective in mind, and that is just they want a better agency.
If you're just joining us this morning on Maryland Morning, we're taking up the issue of civilian oversight of the police department. I'm joined in the studio by Keisha Brown, the director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board. Rodney Hill is the chief of internal affairs for the Baltimore Police Department. They're here with me in the studio. So, Ms. Brown, I want to make sure that folks understand the difference between the Civilian Review Board and the Trial Board. The Trial Board was something very much in the news during this past session of the Maryland Legislature. The LEOBR, the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights, contained language that they wrangled about quite a bit as to civilian participation on the trial board. But the review board and the trial board are two separate things.
That's right. So you can think of the civilian review board as on the front end and the trial board being on the back end. Chief Hill here is head of internal affairs, and the civilian review board runs concurrent, somewhat simultaneous investigations to internal affairs. So we're doing the work on the front end, gathering the information, getting evidence, making an assessment, and then determining whether we believe that a complaint has been sustained, should be sustained or not, giving that information to the police commissioner, who then has the ultimate final decision to decide what to do about that officer, whether he or she will receive discipline or not. At that point, that's when the trial board then could possibly engage.
I mean, what did they decide? As the legislation finally ended up on Governor Hogan's desk, they decided to allow civilians to appear on the trial board. On the other hand, the Fraternal Order of Police has the right to to sort of essentially strike members from the committee. So what do you think the practical result of this particular legislation is going to end up being in terms of civilian participation on the trial board at the back end?
Well, I wasn't involved in the legislation, but in a nutshell, it will be somewhat difficult because the legislature also made it so that the locals, quote unquote, decide it, and it will be done in the collective bargaining process, which is already a very difficult process and one that the city has been engaged with the FOP for quite some time. And so it all depends on the bargaining process, on whether it even gets to fruition, and then who is actually going to be on that board? What's the training around that? What's the lifespan of that person on that board?
So Chief Hill, let's be clear about when a person wants to make a complaint about the police, what are her options?
So what Commissioner Davis did, we noticed there were a lot of inefficiencies. And I would say about a year or so ago when I started working with Director Brown, she pointed out some of those inefficiencies. You had a public local law that I'd say both entities weren't following because no one really raised the bar and said, hey, wait a minute, this says this.
And one of the inefficiencies might have been that people were intimidated by going to the police district in which, you know, they'd had a bad interaction with a police officer. Right? I mean, there were folks who are just not comfortable doing that.
Yeah, but so what happens is because we centralize the disciplinary process, so we moved to command investigation units, everyone under internal affairs, which is located off-site over and off 25th Street, Kirk Avenue, in east part of town. So all discipline is handled under one umbrella in the department.
So to make a complaint, a citizen would go there.
So a citizen go there. Now, a citizen could still go to one of the district stations, ask to speak with a supervisor. They want to make a complaint. They could go to the Office of Civil Rights Wage Enforcement. They could go to legal aid. We get complaints from the Public Defender's Office. You can make a complaint at a number of different places.
A number of different, so they can come directly to you, Ms. Brown.
They can come directly to us. And quite frankly, I definitely hear your point. I think it is quite intimidating, I can imagine, to go to the very district of the police officer who you've had, at the very least, you know, a bad encounter, at worst, a possibly deadly encounter. And so I always encourage people to be able to come directly to our office at 7 East Redwood. We're on the corner of Redwood and Light Street on the 9th floor, to call our office, check out our website, civilrights.baltimorecity.gov, in an effort to connect folks with other opportunities to engage the process.
Keisha Brown's the director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement. She oversees the Civilian Review Board. Chief Rodney Hill is the chief of internal affairs for the Baltimore Police Department. You're listening to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall on 88.1 WYPR. So, Ms. Brown, your budget is about $150,000, from what I understand, for investigators to look into these complaints once you have received them, right? That doesn't seem like a whole lot of money because the police have a considerably larger capacity to look into allegations of misconduct. How do you handle that?
Well, when I took this position in February of 2014, the office was sorely underfunded and had been since really its creation. And I addressed that with the mayor, and she's putting more money behind the Civilian Review Board than any other mayor has before. So our budget will actually be more than the $140,000 this next fiscal year coming up. And we hope that's just really the beginning, because I think it speaks volume at the difference between the Civilian Review Board's budget and, quite frankly, Internal Affairs' budget. There's no comparison into what the value and the resources and where we put our energy. And so
there does seem to be political will for this. Every single mayoral candidate whom I spoke with during this past campaign on the Democratic side said they all supported vastly increasing the Civilian Review Board capacity. I mean, the Review Board, as you mentioned, has been around since 1999. A lot of folks are thinking, well, why has it just been sort of wallowing for all this time?
Well, I can just speak that I have a new vision for the office. New logo is to empower, educate, and enforce. And we are set to do that every day. And it's our jobs to be that independent agency to look at if there are any improprieties by the police department. And we're here to not only look at those individual cases, but also to look at the Baltimore City policies and their practices to ensure that they're in line with what the public expects and what the policy should be based on best practices.
Chief Hill, let's talk about this mandate that the police have to turn over cases or complaints by citizens to the Civilian Review Board within 48 hours. Mm-hmm. That's not always done. Sometimes it's considerably longer than that. Ms. Brown has spoken publicly about a case that took 14 months to go from being received by the police department to being received by the Civilian Review Board. Why is it taking so long in some cases to get it from one place to the other?
Well, in that particular case, the one that took 14 months is the same one I'm thinking of. The law that governs the Civilian Review Board says that the complaints must be notarized. About 85% of our complaints, give or take, either by way of telephone, email. So we don't have a live body in there. So you call and make a complaint, we initiate the investigation. Once the person comes in, we have them fill out the CRB form. We have it notarized.
Civilian Review Board form.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes, and we have it notarized, and then we forward it on to the CRB office. So those are the ones that must done within 48 hours. And we definitely had, that's when I talked about earlier, some inefficiencies, but I can tell you it has definitely been greatly improved. I have one sergeant whose job is just to make sure forward, get those things in time. We've just made it a point that has to be done. So it has been.
And Ms. Brown, I mean, this business of having to have the complaints notarized is a real barrier for a lot of folks. I mean, if you want to do this on your own, you've got to find your own notary public. You've got to pay that person. The accessibility to notaries is very difficult. It used to be they were all over the place, and now, you know, businesses aren't using them as much. Is that a barrier that you see continuing in the future? Is there a way around that to make it easier for folks to make complaints?
Yeah, it's definitely a barrier and has been for quite some time, and an odd one at that, because most state government forms don't require a notary. So the fact that the legislature chose to make a form that the public fills out to file a complaint against a public agency is very peculiar that a notary would be required. It's amongst many, I think, changes that the Civilian Review Board statute needs. It is not a perfect law and needs a lot of revision. The mayor put forth a bill this past session. It passed unanimously through the House and failed in the Senate and the Judicial Proceedings Committee. But I think next year, hopefully, we'll be able to come back with more changes, including removing the notary requirement.
Chief Hill, the process, when you receive a complaint for Internal Affairs and when Ms. Brown gets it at Civilian Review Board, there are separate investigations, right? I mean, she would investigate it with her team. You would investigate it with yours.
Yeah, if the CRB board, when they have the monthly meetings, they will vote on whether they want a separate investigation or go with the department investigation. Now that she has increased the number of investigators, they have taken on more investigations than what's ever before.
Do you find yourself in a position where the determination that you make as a department is at odds with the determination that the Civilian Review Board makes? And if so, how does that get resolved?
There have been some cases, I would say the great majority, and I think Director Brown would agree, we come to the same conclusions. When we do have a difference, and recently we did have two cases where they sustain and we not sustain, and what we've asked is for them to give us their rationalization as to why they felt it was sustained. We would then take it, and this is a new process we've kind of really put in place. It's done differently before. And we would take that to both my legal department and the disciplinary review committee, as we call it. And then we would look at what the CRB has said, look at the rationalizations. Commissioner Davis has made it clear he's not opposed and he's willing to make any changes. If they come up and say, we found this evidence, we believe this, look at it this way, certainly not opposed to making a change. So it can happen.
So, Director Brown, there's no third party that has the sort of ultimate say or anything. I mean, you and Mr. Hill are both lawyers, and it sounds like what happens if there's a dispute, you just lawyer it up a couple other levels. I mean, people just keep looking at it. How does it actually get resolved?
Well, in the scenario that Chief Hill offered, if we sustain and they unsustain, the way the law is written is that the police commissioner has the ultimate decision-making authority. And so we send our letter directly to the police commissioner.
Is that acceptable to you in terms of, is that part of the law that you might want to change? Should there be somebody other than the police commissioner figuring that out?
There are a variety of ways to kind of see the process through, and there are some jurisdictions around the country that do have what's known as like a city manager, a third party who makes that decision and answers directly to the mayor. There are some where there's an independent auditor who reviews whether there's any discrepancies. So there are a number of ways, and I think as Baltimore City really engages in civilian oversight and police community relations and police accountability, we've got to take a serious look at what our process is and whether our process is aligned with our expectations and our values.
The Fraternal Order of Police, not the police department, but the FOP, the union, is suing the Civilian Review Board, and that's an ongoing case as I understand it. And the crux of their case, if I am right about this, is that they don't want to have civilians looking at the records and the, you know, the files on these individual officers, that that's a violation of their constitutional rights. Where does that suit stand, and what's your thought about it?
Well, it's actually them suing the Baltimore City Police Department for the work that the Baltimore City Police Department is doing, engaging with the Civilian Review Board. It's an interesting way of coming about it. But I believe it's still in the courts. The city has since answered the motion. But I'll just say that not everybody is open and ready for change. And like you said, this board has been in existence since 1999. And it is just recently, in the past couple of months, that this suit was filed. And not everybody is ready for change, but change is on its way here in Baltimore.
And Chief Hill, I mean, you don't represent the department as a whole. You're Chief of Internal Affairs.
Correct.
But I mean, what's your take on this lawsuit and its validity?
I do know from reading the motion that it's based on a court of special appeals case, out of Montgomery County, in which their position is that these are personnel files, and according to state statute, no one but people within a certain realm is allowed to look at them. So it's really just a wait and see.
Mm. When Commissioner Davis was on the show several months ago now, mm-hmm. we need to have him back pretty soon, we talked about this general issue of transparency, particularly mm-hmm. in internal affairs. Do you think that there is a greater level of transparency now in the Department of Internal Affairs than there was a year ago or 2 years ago?
I think we are. Now, we have to do it within the realms of the statute. So it's only so much that we're allowed to give out. We're in the process of putting together on our website where we can have certain information about certain internal affairs cases and just trying to be as transparent as we can. We are going to, I know I talked to Director Brown about this, but we want to look at possibly if we can come up with like a universal complaint form, that anytime someone has a complaint, this is what it is. Because right now the Civilian Review Board form is by way of statute. So we're doing as many things as we possibly can. And like I said, the numbers that I give out, I mean, 12 terminations this year alone within 5 months. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Ms. Brown, we're running out of time. Are you satisfied that progress is being made, that the graph is heading north rather than south when it comes to cooperation from the police, transparency on the part of the police, and buy-in from the community? Are citizens feeling like the Citizens Review Board is a viable, effective way of addressing their concerns?
So I think progress is being made, but we have a long way to go, right? And I think when I first started, I was expecting or hoping that we would be even further along. But there are so many parts to this puzzle that we need to get right. You know, being able to come on your show is a great help to the Civilian Review Board, because a big part of it is people not knowing we even exist, let alone who we are and what we do. And so being able to engage the community in ways that we've never done before, to be able to have conversations around what are your expectations? What do you want your civilian oversight to look like? What does police accountability in Baltimore City look like?
Keisha Brown is the director of Baltimore's Office of Civil Rights and Wage Enforcement, which oversees the Civilian Review Board. Rodney Hill is the Chief of Internal Affairs for the Baltimore Police Department. We've got links to more information about the Civilian Review Board and the internal affairs process at the Baltimore City Police Department on our website. Come on over to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. Keisha Brown and Rodney Hill, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Coming up after a break for the news, a cognitive scientist who is also a theater artist. This is Your Brain on Drama.
You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
Thanks,
Nelson's a good one.
We'll start calling you Nelson. Yeah, right. Nathan Sterner, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not driving, give him a hand. It's Tom Hall, it's Maryland Morning, and it's my pleasure to welcome back to the show Dr. Monica Lopez-Gonzalez. She is a cognitive neuroscientist whose work is focused on understanding the process of creative thinking. She's also a photographer and a theater artist, and the writer-director of a trilogy of plays, the third of which is receiving its world premiere next weekend at the Theater Project. It's called Framed Illusion, and Monica Lopez-Gonzalez joins me in Studio A. It's good to see you, Monica.
Likewise. Thank you.
So tell me about the trilogy, the whole group of these plays, of which Framed Illusion, the premiere next week, is the third.
Yeah, it's a trilogy because I'm a Romance language speaker, and I was determined to make a Romance language trilogy for the stage. And so my first play I wrote in Spanish called Última Partida, in which I presented in Spanish with English surtitles, so it was called The Final Draw. The second play I wrote in French, but I produced it in English, and it was called In Session. It's a French title, for those of you who like French, is Chez l'Analyste. And this play I actually wrote in both English and Italian, and it's called Framed Illusion in English, but in Italian, Cornice di un'illusione. And the idea is that I'm really fascinated to see how different languages work with music, live musical improvisation.
Because each of these plays includes this dimension of a player or players reacting to what's going on.
Yes.
Thematically and dramatically with improvised music.
Exactly. And so the idea here is that if I can see if when I change the language or when I change sort of the cultural context to see what will happen in real time when musicians are asked to improvise and react to the dialogue on stage or the body language on stage or the scenery on stage.
So the first one, Ultima Partida, was set in a cabaret.
Yes.
The second one, In Session, the French one, it's a plastic surgeon and her psychiatrist.
Yep.
And this third one, Framed Illusion, tell us the setup for this one.
In this one, I take the idea of an interrogation room. I take the characters of a police detective and a suspect, and both are women. They're both femme fatales. This is my response to how film noir really should be, what it should be about, and the genre in film, but as well as in theater, and the idea that we need two strong female characters. And so both the suspect and the detective play really a game of cat versus cat. They're both very smart, they're both very conniving, and they're both innocent in a way. And so they play off of each other.
There have been a number of festivals, a couple of which have been produced here in Baltimore, that concentrate on female playwrights mm-hmm. and female plays that have strong female characters. This fits certainly right into that very welcome and growing trend, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And it's interesting because I didn't literally do it because of this growing trend. This was sort of my reaction to all the film world and the theater world where I have seen lack of strong characters. And it just turned out that this one, since I wanted to continue a two-person dialogue, that this would be a great moment where you can have two people really face-to-face.
You are fluent in Spanish, French, pretty fluent in Italian,
yeah,
as well as English, obviously. How does multilingualism play into the creation of this work, and how does it inform, you know, what you're trying to put across?
Yeah, it's actually, when I'm writing these plays, I'm literally hearing both languages, or sometimes even all three, all four at the same time.
Can get confusing.
I love language, and I studied, even when I was in my PhD in cognitive science, I studied the mechanics of linguistics, semantics, pragmatics, and syntax. And that, it does inform my plays a lot and informs both how I choose the exact words I want to use, the poetry I want to create within and between the languages. And there gets a point when I finally finish the play where I say, okay, I have to just think in one language to finalize and edit it. But I'm constantly thinking all three, and that's the reason why I've created this trilogy, really to put my interest of language and put it out in different contexts.
There's some research recently, which I'm sure you know a lot more about than I do, saying that folks who speak more than one language, if you're multilingual, tend to be happier. They tend to be more content. Have you read this research? And what do you think? You seem like a very happy person.
I haven't heard about the happiness, but that's great.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised, because when an infant is learning or hearing multiple languages while they're learning language, they literally have different grammars. They're following different grammars in their mind. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there's this constant searching for the language, which word to use, which word not to use. And you will notice if you deal with young bilinguals, they are constantly what's called code switching. So they're bringing in pieces of different languages within a single sentence. And that's how it's a joke between us multilinguals, and we laugh about it. So maybe that's where the happiness comes in.
Well, when you're doing your work as a scientist, you're very concerned with the creative process, how people create, and this cognitive relationship between artistic stuff, or emotional stuff, you know, intellectual, rational stuff. What do you learn about that as a theater artist? What are you teaching yourself as a cognitive scientist when you write, and in this case even star in, the productions?
Yeah, so as a scientist, I come in asking the question, you know, what will happen during the live creative process on stage? And I create the works with specific emotional parts, specific conceptual parts that I want to see what will happen when the musicians have to translate that into music. As the artist, I'm literally listening to how I as a character will react to the music in real time. And I'm also seeing how that affects our communication between emotions as characters and as people. And the science side is, what does that mean for how emotion is involved in the creative process?
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. All right, well, break a leg next weekend. Have a great time.
Thanks
for coming by. Dr. Monica Lopez Gonzalez, she's the creator and star of Framed Illusion, which opens at the Theater Project in Baltimore next week. It starts Thursday night, runs until Sunday, June 12th. The following weekend, there will be two cabaret-style performances at Germano's Piattini in Little Italy. Got a link to ticket information on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Maryland Morning's director, engineer, and co-host is Nathan Sterner. The show is produced by Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong, and Kathleen Cahill, with production assistance from Lauren Ferguson. Lauren just graduated from Towson University. Welcome to the real world, Lauren. Austin Coughlin has been in the real world for longer than he'd like to admit. He's from Clean Cuts, and he wrote and recorded the Maryland Morning theme music. Coffee for our guests provided by Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. You can find them online, ZEKES Coffee.com. We'll be back on Monday with a special Memorial Day edition of Maryland Morning. I'll talk to the public interest lawyer and MacArthur Genius Grant winner Brian Stevenson, who has worked for 30 years with inmates on death row. We'll also meet a very talented young student from Baltimore, Vivi Etemé, who landed a role in a major motion picture about Nina Simone. That's all coming up Memorial Day morning on Maryland Morning. On behalf of the entire Maryland Morning team, we hope you have a good holiday weekend. Our thoughts this weekend are with the families of veterans who have lost their lives. We thank those veterans and the people they've left behind for their service, and we thank those who still serve. Garrison Keillor's up next with the Writer's Almanac. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening.